You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday the 10th of December 2021 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. We reached the end of another week and it's my first Daily Nationalist for the week and I'm very looking forward to today's episode because we have with us today Grandpa Dan all the way from Texas. Grandpa, good day sir. How the devil are you?
Well, if there's going to be like one and only Daily Nationalist for this week, this is the one it needs to be with you and I together, of course, covering some sort of clown worldly, which there is no shortage of. And as I look at today's story, I just can't help but think this is why we can't have nice things.
We certainly can no longer have nice things around when we have left-wing professors telling us that they're all racist and white supremacist. And the latest thing to be outed as racist, neo-Nazi, white supremacist is children's classic stories. Yes, classic children's stories like Harry the Dog, Dr. Seuss, and Disney Tales have been slammed by an Australian academic for being outdated, sexist, and racist. Dr. Helen Adam from Western Australia's Edith Cowan University says many family favourites should be pulled off the shelves and replaced by more inclusive books. Well, I guess this must be the reason why we have these grooming gangs going around the country and in Britain, seducing and raping and trafficking young white girls. It's all because they've been reading Dr. Seuss books and Disney tales. I don't think I've actually heard of Harry the Dog, but I did used to enjoy reading Dr. Seuss when I was a child, and I used to enjoy watching Disney movies, and I don't think I turned out too badly. I think they set a good example, really. The people in them were always moral, they always well-behaved, they were always courteous, they always tried to set a good example. It really just shows us how degenerate our society has become, that putting across good ethics, good morality is now seen as being the epitome of evil, sexist and racist. Grandpa, what do you make of this? Have you ever heard of Harry the Dog? Is that a book that you remember from your childhood at all?
I don't remember Harry the Dog. I remember all kinds of children's books when I was a kid growing up. I didn't realize maybe, you know, that was the early exposure to the extremist, racist, sexist views, apparently. Apparently, I guess we have. I'm sitting here stumped, though, because this is an Australian, quote unquote, academic. This is what this person gets paid probably six figures a year to be an academic. And what are they academically doing? Worrying about children's books because they're not inclusive enough. Now, we have an academic here in-house at Radio Albion. Dr. Johnson is by the very definition of an academic. I always tell people I love listening to Dr. J's stuff. I feel like I'm getting a college lecture for absolutely free, you know. But yet this is what the paid academics are doing. They're worrying about Dr. Seuss. They're worrying about classic Disney tales, and they're worrying about Harry the Dog. And they're worried about we need to pull these off the shelf. Remember when academics, you remember when liberals, quote unquote, old time liberals used to be worried about censorship, and they used to say, you know, we got to have all views and we can't have people banning books. But now the quote unquote liberal academics are the ones calling for banning books, and they're not even calling for anything like, you know, you expect you shouldn't be allowed to read Mein Kampf because you might suddenly, I don't know, your mind might suddenly get infected by Hitlerism or something. No, children's books. We got to pull children's books off the shelf. It's so absolutely crazy that they're trying to find a Nazi under every bed. And now the Nazi is named Dr. Seuss. How much more absurd can it get? I asked that question. question every single week, and I can't find the answer because we just seem to go a little and little further every single time.
We just keep finding more. Wherever you look, there is more evidence of Clown World on display. This Dr. Helen Adams, she says in a new study, the world represented in children's books reflects predominantly middle-class, heterosexual, male heroes and characters. Well, could that possibly be because the books were written by heterosexuals and most authors were middle-class 30 or 40 years ago? She says, sadly, evidence from the last 30 years suggests a long-standing problem with gender representation in children's books. It's not as if there have never been any little girls in children's books. There's always been girls and boys. I used to enjoy reading Narnia. I think there was a whole family of children that were in these Narnia books. And why is it a problem to have male heroes? Aren't most heroes males throughout history? I really can't think of very many female heroes. The ones that are held up in great regard, I can think of Joan of Arc. Can't really think of many more. Maybe Queen Victoria, things like that. They're held up as heroes. But the fact of the matter is that it's men that have the body strength that are there to protect the women. That's why you don't have very many female heroes, because it's very easy to overpower a woman if you're a male, just by the simple body strength. But look at the world that we've come to today, where it's considered to be wrong to be heterosexual or middle class. And again, the people that were actually writing these books, they were writing books for their own children. That's who they were writing the books for. And I dare say that their children enjoyed reading them. Why should they be writing books for homosexuals? Why should they be writing books for lesbians that dream of being male when they're actually female? And I dare say they did portray the lower classes. I mean, you had Oliver Twist. You had stories about the workhouses, and they would always try to elicit a sense of empathy amongst the readers for people that were from a different class, and always set a good example, basically. And back then, you would imagine that a children's book that had, say, homosexual characters in it would be seen as entirely degenerate and the last thing that you would want children to actually be reading. I mean, it's like everything's got turned around completely topsy-turvy. What do you make of her dislike, her middle-class phobia here, Grandpa?
Well, you see, you're talking about stories that portray workhouses and, you know, kids being chimney sweeps. You see, that's their white privilege. You can't really talk about white privilege if you're having stories about how child labor was abused in older times. Yeah, I love the way that she talks about world represented in children books reflects predominantly middle class heterosexual male heroes and characters. It sounds pretty nice. Sounds pretty nice to me. I mean, really, what is wrong with that? I love how she puts this out here, like there's something inherently evil, something inherently bad and wrong with it. It makes you wonder, well, what does she want to replace these stories with? What books does she, you know, what does she want to replace these books with? Lawn Boy, the book that got found in schools over here, where it's being basically for fourth graders, where the character talks about having a homosexual encounter with an adult man and really enjoying it. Is this the type of, because I think that is. I think that's the sort of thing they want to replace. They go forth with the whole nonsense of, oh, this is an inclusive. We got to get rid of these books because they're racist, sexist. But what do they want to replace them with? Oh, well, homosexual propaganda, some sort of deal to condition the children. At some point, it always comes back to, it's going to condition the children to be open to having sex with adults, and one probably gay sex with adults. They don't really want to get into that, do they? They don't really want to get into being specific about what should they read. Give us some books for certain that you want to replace it. And if they do, it'll just be, well, we have this book that has a black character. And trust me, there's no shortage of books with black characters. And I can assure you, in every school library, you're going to get plenty of books with black characters, but they have to tear it down. All they know how to do is destroy, destroy, destroy. They don't know how to build anything up. So, oh, well, there's a few places where you could still actually find classic literature there's a few places that aren't promoting the anti-white race hate agenda. We've got to tear that down. Oh my gosh, somebody might look at this book that isn't portraying white people as inherently evil. We got to get rid of that. At the end of the day, whenever I read one of these cancel culture type stories, you've got this academic, we have two women academics here involved in this study to tell us what should be pulled off the shelves. And why doesn't everybody just tell them to piss off? I never, because these things are troubling, because what always happens, they'll come out with their quote unquote study, and then the universities, the school systems will run out and act like, well, we have to act on it. We've got a study. We have a research that says this is inherently evil. Of course, there's nothing to actually back that up. They can't find anybody to say, yes, my life was destroyed because I read Dr. Seuss when I was freaking 5 years old. They can't find anybody to back that up. They can't find anybody to say that. So they just come out with this vague hand-waving study and a lot of name-calling and a lot of baseless accusations that people are somehow being damaged by Dr. Nobody was damaged for years before, but somehow now people are being damaged. And then the universities, the school systems, essentially the government will run around and say, oh, well, we got to react to this. We better start thinking about editing. We better start pulling these off the shelf. It's this stupid circle jerk theater. Because that's what the regime, that's what the government wants to do in the first place. So they fund these quote-unquote academics. They come out with a study. They'll react. They'll pull it off the shelf. The vast majority, we're supposed to have a democracy. The vast majority of people are like, we don't have a problem with this. I mean, are black people worried about Dr. Seuss? I don't think they are. I think they've got other things they're really worried about. But yet, no, this is all theater. And at the end of the day, they're going to do what they want to do, which is to pull any last semblance of something that doesn't promote the anti-white race hate agenda off the shelf, get it out of society, replace it with this other utter crap that will never be classic literature because it's crap. It's just propaganda. And you know, that's it. They can't have anything nice. They can't leave anything of culture, anything of history, anything of our heritage. It's all got to be tore down. It's all got to be replaced. And it's got to be replaced with ugliness.
Well, she's not even sort of presenting any alternatives. It's not like there were alternatives years ago, because we didn't really have a multicultural society years ago. So, of course, white people are going to write storybooks for white children. Why should they be writing storybooks for people on the other side of the world? It doesn't make any sense. She says representation of children and families outside of the traditional heteronormative understandings are most often absent in children's books. Well, obviously, because anything outside of the traditional heteronormative understanding is an evolutionary dead end, isn't it? You're not going to produce any children. The people that are actually writing the books are not going to be reproduced. They're just going to end up dying out if you have anything that's outside of traditional heteronormative understanding. And why would there be anybody writing stuff like that years ago? People weren't maladapted like they are now. Harry the dog in particular came under fire for using the gendered pronoun he for the main character and showing active boys brushing the dog whilst nurturing girls patted him. Because, of course, we don't want girls learning to be nurturing, do we? We don't want them actually being good at being mothers. We don't want boys being active and doing productive things like brushing the dog. And we certainly don't want people being secure in their gender and knowing whether they are male or female by the way that they are addressed. No, we don't want that at all. We want our children to be confused about their gender. We want them to be dysphoric, and we want girls to be bad mothers, and we want boys to pretend that they're girls. That's what we want here, isn't it? I mean, it's just so ludicrous what she is suggesting here. Male characters outnumbered female by 3-1 in Jean Zion's 1956 classic, she noted. That's this Harry the Dog. And depicted a nuclear family with a homemaker mother and a businessman father. I mean, horror of horrors. It actually depicted a normal family. Everything that is normal and productive and good is now being seen as evil. Evil Harry the Dog. I'm surprised he wasn't pictured wearing an SS uniform. Grandpa, what do you make of her description of this book here and the family involved?
Traditional heteronormative understandings were most often, outside of traditional heteronormative. Normative. You know what that means? Normal. You know why those other lifestyles aren't promoted? Because they're not normal. They can sit here and kvetch. They can sit here and throw dust in the air and talk about inclusiveness and we need this, we need that, and oh my gosh, this is so not inclusive. But you know what? It doesn't change the fact that what you're promoting here, what this person's promoting, is abnormal. You know why it's called heteronormative? Because that is the normal. That is the normal way of society. That is what normal functioning societies look like. They don't look like this stupid, retarded, degenerate crap that they that they push 24/7. We're supposed to take this person seriously. And you know, they're upset because the dog was referred to as he, because I'm assuming it's a male dog. What is the dog? Are we supposed to be convinced that the dog might be confused about its gender? I'm assuming in the story it's a male dog, so that you know it's a male dog. They refer to the dog as he. Were they supposed to tell the kid, oh, we found this dog, and it's referred to as they and them? Or it's just utter absurdity. And again, this person is being paid. When you pay tens of thousands of dollars to send your kid to college for the tuition, just know this is where your money's going, to pay an academic such as this. Worry about it. Oh, yes, boys were brushing the dogs while nurturing girls patted them. What do they want? Do they want the girls to be kicking the dog? I mean, what is it? Do they have a problem? And then that final line, it depicts a nuclear family with a homemaker mother. Yes, we should instead have a fragmented family where the kids are just ripped apart by divorce and everybody's horribly unhappy. And maybe, you know, maybe the dad's turned homosexual or something. What are they actually, you know, the fact that they sit here and talk about, you know, something that is very nice, a normal family with a mother that takes care of the children instead of abandoning them somewhere, and a father that actually provides for the children, comes home and gives guidance to the family. This is horrible. This is terrible. This has to be destroyed. This has to be torn down. We can't have that. The fact that these people just hate everything that is good, everything that is good for people, everything, because they try to act like they brush this stuff up and they dress it up in words like inclusion, and they try to pretend like they're being sympathetic towards others, but they're horrible and destructive. You're talking about taking something like that is good for people, like having a nuclear intact family where children can feel safe and secure, and all they know how to do is tear it down, destroy it. We have to insert homosexual propaganda. There's something wrong if there's not some man-on-man anal going on in this family. All they know how to do is destroy. And it's the same theme over and over with these people. We got to destroy anything that's nice. You can't have anything that's nice. You can't have anything that might actually be good for people. Instead, we have to destroy it. We have to tear it all down.
Perhaps they should have an alcoholic single mother there, maybe some children that were abused by a stepfather. Perhaps the children can then take out the abuse on the dog. Perhaps if the dog is castrated, it should be referred to as they or them. Well, this wasn't just reserved for Harry the dog. She also has some criticism for Doctor's Use as well. Some Doctor's Use books, like The Cat in the Hat, published in 1957, were attacked for promoting white supremacy and racism through its characters and storyline. Dr. Seuss books portray minority cultures in stereotypical or exotic ways, and often in subservient roles to white characters, wrote Dr. Adam in an earlier study. Dr. Seuss animal stories often transmit racist messaging through symbolism and allegories. I mean, that's the first time I've ever heard of anybody being animalist and animals actually being racist here. And you would think that Cat in the Hat would get children interested in other countries and other peoples. You are going to find stereotypes because you're trying to explain to children that there are differences between us and these other peoples, and these differences is what diversity is all about. And they're very interesting because of that. And you're going to pick up on the things that countries, particularly like China, are most well known for, like, I don't know, Chinese hats and dragons and the sort of things. You know more about these Asian traditions, Grandpa, but they're interesting to white people, aren't they?
I don't even remember any actual people ever being presented in Dr. Seuss. They're always funny looking characters. I don't remember any books having actual, like, people in them. They're these, I don't know, these caricature thing, you know, they kind of look like animals, but they walk around. I mean, you look at the Cat in the Hat. I mean, he's not going around going meow meow. He walks around like a person, but yeah, he looks like a cat, sort of. Almost looks more more like a dog. I mean, they sit here, and again, it never stops. They've got to find a racism. They've got to find an offensive thing somewhere. And I was sitting here thinking about a story because they're trying to make, you know, animal stories racist. And I remember a story, and I can't remember because it's been so long ago. I was a kid. But I remember talking about, we're talking about these different stories. And I remember a children's story that I read when I was a little kid, and it had something to do with it. And somebody's probably going to hear this and say, that was such and such, and remind me what the name of that story was. But it was this story about this monkey, and he was having this back and forth with these vultures. And the whole story is about this monkey and the vultures going back and forth. And I'm thinking this person's head would explode because they would say, oh, the monkey, you know, that's racist. That's trying to be a representation for black people. And if I remember right, the story is based off of an African fable. It was basically an African story that somebody translated around and put into a children's book. But this person wouldn't know how to handle that because somehow the monkey would be representing African people, but it's an African story. So is it racist? Is it not? It's just stupid. And I refuse to treat it seriously in the sense that like these people are making some sort of valid points, because they're not. They're stupid. They need to be called stupid. And it would just be nice if we lived in a normal society, this person wouldn't be getting paid tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to find some sort of offense under every bed. This person wouldn't have a job because they're obviously stupid. They're obviously, they don't have any qualifications to be teaching at a university, much less receive funding to do some sort of study about the offensiveness of children books. But alas, as we point out here, week in and week out, we don't live in a sane, functioning, normal society. We live in a collapsing, sick society. And these, once again, these are all just symptoms. These are all just symptoms of our sick and declining society.
You know, people used to complain about the violence in cartoons, and they used to say, Disney, they're very wholesome. They don't have any violence in Disney cartoons, and yet she even has a go at Disney. The often inspiring Disney classics, including Mona, Frozen, and Snow White, were also blamed for perpetuating racial divides and gender stereotypes. Disney stories, both in print and visual media, perpetuate racism, senior educational lecturer Dr. Adam claimed. Disney stories relentlessly define the United States as white, middle class, and heterosexual, and often serve to reproduce sexist, racist, and colonial ideologies. Well, I do know that Disney have been trying to rectify this, and in one of their recent movies, they had two homosexual princes, I believe. It was banned in Russia. You had to be over 18 to actually see this homosexual propaganda. So Disney have really sort of tried to implement this sort of stuff already. But the previous Disney movies, I mean, they were really, really wholesome. I mean, what do they want instead of Snow White? Coal Black and the Seven Midgets or something? Seven Pygmies? I mean, you would get accused of being racist if you were to do something like that. And if you're a white author or a white creator, you're obviously going to be creating things from your experience, aren't you? And if they were to try and pretend that they were doing somebody else's experience, they would get accused of cultural appropriation, wouldn't they? They would be accused of trying to put blackface on characters here, and they should be using black authors and black animators. Well, where are they? Where are the black authors? Where are the black animators? Why can't they say, well, look, you've got all this wonderful black movies and black books that have been written. Why aren't we using them? They're not saying that. What they're saying is that white people should have been writing things for black people. They don't want to point out the fact that there actually aren't any black books that were written or black cartoons or anything like this. They just want white people to do it for them. You know, I would be quite embarrassed to think that and to say something like that. You know, you would think, well, if a job needs doing, then that means that you should do it. You shouldn't expect somebody else to do it. That was the morals that I was brought up with. But no, today you're just brought up to blame white people for everything. And if you haven't got something particularly tailored for you, then blame white people for it. Don't blame your own people for not creating it. You have to blame whites. Are you aware of any of these movies, Grandpa? I think most of them are pretty recent, aren't they? Mona, Frozen. I think I might have seen Snow White when I was a child. Do you know any of these Disney classics?
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, I know about Snow White and the Seven height challenged people who are non-binary, you know, maybe the seven little people could be like at some point in the show, they could shoehorn in a gay orgy for the dwarfs. Then we could be enlightened. For these people, it's always year zero. They want you to forget that it wasn't always insane. And that is one of the things we see over and over as a common denominator in these things. They want to erase history because it's always year zero for these people. You're not supposed to look back and say, well, we used to not live in clown world. How come we're doing this whole clown world thing? Perfect example of this. Disney stores relentlessly define the United States as white, middle class, and heterosexual. That's because it's what it was. It's what it's always been until fairly recently, historically speaking. It's always been that. You know, but they see they have to erase that. It's supposed to be year zero. You're supposed to think that life in 1950 was just like life in current clown world. They were just lying to you about it. You see, things weren't wholesome. You didn't have nuclear families. You didn't have people that, you know, promoted like a normal family life. You didn't have, heterosexual normality. You didn't have any of that. You see, it's always been like this. They want to promote this idea that it's always been this way. This isn't something new. Why it's always been that way. Of course, to do that, they have to erase every part, everything that reminds you that things aren't insane, because every reminder that we used to not do this insanity is an opportunity for people to stop and ask the question, well, then why are we doing this now? How come it is that in years past, we had a normal functioning society with like intact families and we didn't have nonstop man-on-man anal promotion as though that's the highest form of enlightenment? How come we used to not have that? And it seems like things were functioning pretty well in our societies. It had its problems. There's no such thing as a perfect society. Sure, our society has had problems. Any society is going to have problems. But it sure looks like if we go back and look, societies were a lot more wholesome. They were a lot more normal. They were a lot more healthy. They were functioning societies. And now we have this crap. Why do we have this now? Why are we going along with this? So they can't have that. So they must erase anything that can remind people that this, what we're doing right now as a people, as a society, is not normal. This is not normal. This isn't even like recently normal. You go back 30 years, this is not normal, which is a very short time period. This is not normal. This is not how things have always been. But see, they don't want you to remember that, because then you'll question, why in the hell are we doing this now?
Well, the study was co-authored with a Laurie Harper, and it was based on an analysis of the books being read or given to children in daycare centres in Australia and the United States. It found that around 90% of their frequently read books were not inclusive of diverse characters and were largely told from a white male perspective. And I bet that 90% of the authors are probably white males. And if you were to go back 50 or 70 years, you would find that 100% of all the authors were white males. Again, why is it that non-whites are complaining about this? If they want more books that are written by their people need to write more books, surely, rather than demand white people write these books for them. Dr. Adam added, purely and simply, this research shows there is a lack of representation of boys and girls in non-traditional gender roles in these books. And again, that's because we didn't have lots of transgenders years ago, because boys and girls were happy to be little boys and girls. They weren't confused. They weren't dysphoric. They had traditional upbringings, and they knew where the boundaries were, and they knew how they were expected to behave and what was going to make them happy in life. They didn't want to be dysphoric. Dr. Adam says research over many years is clear about the negative impact of sexism and gender stereotypes on children's development. Now, where is that? Where is this research that shows there is a negative impact in having traditional sexual and gender roles promoted to children? I would suggest there is no evidence that shows there's a negative impact of that. The last however many knows thousands of years has shown that it is positive to have these stereotypes, because people are then happy with the roles that they actually have. What we see today is, once we've introduced this confusion, we now have a massive increase in the number of people with dysphoria. We have a massive increase in the number of people that are homosexual. We have a massive increase in the number of children that have neuroses and various mental disorders, and they have to be given antidepressants, massive increase in depression. We're even now seeing suicide among children. And yet she claims that the research shows that none of that exists, and in actual fact that all the bad things were caused by gender stereotypes and by white people writing these books. Well, come on then, let's see these wonderful books that the non-whites have written then. Let's see if they're going to improve this situation, because I don't think they will. I think they're just going to make the situation worse. What do you think of her claim about the research has been done, the science is known here, Grandpa?
Well, you make a really good point in calling that out, because they rely on people being basically, oh, I'm an academic, so you're supposed to yield to authority, a sense of authority, this credentialism, this person who's obviously stupid. I mean, they're obviously stupid, but they have a degree. They're an academic. They've been given the title of academic. So you're supposed to bow to their opinion. And you bring up a real good point in pointing out that they throw this out, that this research shows. But it's bullshit. There is no research. She's not showing anything. She just throws that out there, and you're not supposed to question it because, after all, academic. Now, I will disagree with you on one thing, because I look at this and I tried to look up these people and could find, you know, very few pictures. But from the names and from what I could, I think both of these quote unquote academics and researchers are white women. I don't think by and large this is something that non-whites are whining about, because I mean, I don't live in the academic bubble that a university professor in Australia lives in. You know, I know black people, have been around black people, and I can tell you with absolute confidence, black people, your run-of-the-mill average everyday black people, do not give a shit about Dr. Seuss. They are not worried about Dr. Seuss. They're not worried about gender norms in a book. In fact, if you went to a regular, just pick a random black household with kids running around and went in there and said, hey, we got some children's books for you, and they'd be like, well, what you got? And you'd be like, here, read this to your kids. And then the black mama's gonna sit there and start going through this book talking about gender neutral, and little Tyrone thinks that maybe he likes boys and wants to have a homosexual relationship with an adult man. I'm gonna tell you what, black mama's gonna get up and kick some white academic bitch's ass out of her front door. This is not the sort of thing black people care about. This is the sort of thing white women academics care about, to pretend like they're important, to pretend like they're championing the cause for the poor downtrodden black people. Black people do not care about Dr. Seuss. Black people do not care about Harry the dog. They don't care about Snow White. They got their own problems. They're not worried about this. This is the sort of things you get from these quote unquote academics, and the arrogance of it, that they come out here and act like, see, we're championing, we are the champion cause of the non-whites who are being oppressed by these children's storybooks that they just so happen to not care about. The other arrogance of this attitude, like they're somehow saving these people from something that they don't care about, have never cared about, and do not care about. I find that arrogance just breathtaking, that they can actually stand up there with a straight face and then at the same time accuse everybody else that doesn't want to see tradition and normality torn down as being the racist, the sexist, the evil haters. It's just them. It's just them being destructive. And in the name of what? In the name of, oh, we're championing these people, we're championing this people. They're not championing anybody, because they just want to destroy. They hate everything that's traditionalist. They hate everything that's normal. And they hate everything that's remotely white.
You know, I have a sneaking suspicion that there might be a reason other than racism as to why black children don't really like reading very much. But she says gender bias gives boys a sense of entitlement and lowers girls' self-esteem and occupational aspirations, and teaches children that girls are of less value than boys. Gender bias gives boys a sense of duty. That's what it does. It tells boys that they should be providing for the girls and they should be protecting the girls. And when they portray women as being mothers, it gives these young girls the best aspirations they can have, that they can produce children and that will make them happy, rather than teaching them to try and pretend to be boys, which they will never be as good as a boy at being a boy, the same as a boy would never be as good at being a girl as a girl. But she says female characters from minority ethnic groups, as well as characters other than heteronormative gender identities, are even less likely to be represented. Well, again, that's because there really weren't very many females from minority ethnic groups that were in white countries more than 50 or 70 years ago, even in America. Well, she believes many books on current reading lists are there because the teachers were given them when they were children. I mean, what's wrong with that? I mean, clearly, these books did a good job. Otherwise, these teachers would not be teaching, and they obviously have fond memories of them. And that's why these books are on the reading list. And she says that they were often put there by parents or teachers who had also loved them as children too. So obviously that's wrong. Anything you loved as a child must be wrong and must be removed, must be destroyed, as you point out, Grandpa. Well, Dr. Adam has proposed a new reading list should be pushed out to children, focusing more on titles written within the last 20 to 30 years rather than the classics. Books on her proposed reading list include My Shadow is Pink by Scott Stewart, Who's Your Real Mum by Bernadette Green, and Do You Want to Play Trucks by Anne Stott. So they're all there just to sort of confuse people's gender, to tell people that it's perfectly normal to come from a broken family, and to encourage boys to like pink things and behave like girls. I mean, it's really not conducive to society to be brainwashing the children with this. Why can't we just teach them nice things and pretend that there is a nice world out there where there are happy families and where there are boys and girls that enjoy doing boys and girls things? What do you make of what she has to say here about bias and minority ethnic groups, Grandpa?
This is a perfect example. Whether you're discussing something with one of these lunatics or whether you're simply reading an article about these people, you cannot give them any, you cannot take anything they say. You have to challenge them on every single point. You can't let them make a point and just let it go by like they're speaking the truth. Like the opening of what you read there, gender bias gives boys a sense of entitlement and lowers girls' self-esteem. Okay, stop. Where's the proof of this? As you said earlier on the other point, where's the proof? She doesn't have that. She just makes this blatant allegation that this is the case, but there's absolutely no proof. And in fact, the proof points the other way. If we're actually doing academic research, you would look back and say, well, let's see. Back when these things were fairly new and these classic stories were being written, we had normal, intact families. People were growing up more mentally healthy. And this whole nonsense about trying again, I find it so arrogant that these people are acting like they're standing up and speaking for black people. If you want to talk about black people, let's look at how black families were functioning in the 1950s and the 1960s under all of this so-called horrible racist depression. Those families were much healthier then. When these books were somehow these books have always just been so detrimental. But that's a lie, because you go back in time and look at families, whether you're talking about white families, black families, doesn't matter. They were much more healthy. They make this blatant statement. Oh, it lowers girls' self-esteem and just makes things horrible. But it didn't, because you look back when these things were written, when these things were really popularized, and they were popularized because it was a reflection on society as a whole. And everybody said, yes, this is a good thing. This is how our society should be functioning. Black families were healthier. White families were healthier. There was no problem. But again, as I pointed out earlier, everything has to be year zero. We want to get rid of all of that that might remind people that, you know, a society not clown world was actually better for everybody involved. No, she wants to replace it with stuff that's been written, you know, yesterday. Then pretend like that's the way things have already been. I have no idea. Don't ask me what these books she's suggesting. But I mean, from the name, My Shadow is Pink, obviously we're going to get queer stuff here with that. Who's Your Real Mom? Yes, because that's a question people should be asking. I wonder where's my mama? Where's my daddy? Yes, that is something that's going to be uplifting for people. Instead of giving people something to reach for, something that, you know, life can be better. And this is one of these common themes we see with these people. Because even if you have a shitty life, you know, like if you were, say, back in when these stories were popularized, and say you did live in a broken home and you had things rough, or you had an alcoholic mother or whatever, things were bad, you could read these stories and think, you know, things could be better. Maybe things can get better. Maybe, like, you know, this isn't how life has to be. For these people, they don't want to give anybody any kind of hope, any kind of aspiration that, you know, maybe life could be better. Maybe someday when I'm grown and I have kids, I'll know and learn from my parents. Mistakes and do a better job. No. They want to take the negatives and raise those things up as the normal. If you take the negative, worst aspects of society, raise those things up and say, no, this is what normal looks like, then there's nothing for people to reach for. They don't give a higher goal for people to aspire to. They just take the most base thing and say, this is normal. This is all there is. There's nothing better to reach for. And it's just another example of how they're just so utterly destructive.
Well, they're just taking people's hope away from them, aren't they? They're just destroying people's hope and saying that there's no better life for you out there, not even in fantasy books, not even in children's books. Well, Dr. Adam said lots of the centres had mainly older books, some first published in the 50s or the 60s, when society's views on these topics were very different to today. The majority of the books promoted traditional, binary and stereotypical viewpoints of gender and gender roles. Yes, because they were expected to shape the next generation and encourage the next generation to replace itself and not end up just neutralizing itself and not producing any children. She says it is great to see that more inclusive children's literature is starting to be published now. And by that, she just means literature with more of the white people replaced in it. Although books are becoming more diverse with an increased balance between leading female and male characters, many of the roles played by these characters still reflect only traditional gender roles and expectations. This makes it challenging for adults when choosing empowering books to share with children. So she's basically saying it's difficult for her to find books which promote homosexuality for children. Gender equity in early childhood picture books, a cross study of frequently read picture books in early childhood classrooms in Australia and the United States was published in the Australian Educational Researcher. So I would guess that that's probably quite an important publication. And unfortunately, a lot of the school teachers over there in Australia and in the United States will probably be paying attention to this and trying to shoehorn those degenerate books into the classroom for the children to read. Grandpa, what are your final thoughts on all of this for today?
Well, they absolutely will do that because that's the way this theater works. Instead of these people being dismissed and saying, well, you're obviously insane. In fact, the university that employs them should step up and say you're fired because we don't know who the hell hired you because you're obviously a nutcase. They won't do that. They'll do this theater and say, well, we have this study. Now we've got to go through and pull these books and replace them by people that no one's ever heard of with some modern pop culture crap and pretend that that's normal. They keep throwing out traditional gender roles. They're called traditional because that's normal. Why? What's so wrong with promoting things that are normal? And they always, again, they throw these baseless, false assumptions out there and you're supposed to swallow them hook, line and sinker. Because you can look back and say, well, in these supposedly oppressive times, were women happier? Were women happier, like having families and being married and having a stable home and having children? Are they happier now that they pursue a career and then wake up one day and they're 45 and no children and go, oh, shit, now I can't have any kids and it's too late. I can't undo it. Because you look, were people happier then? Were families more intact? Were everybody as a society in a better place then or now? Because observable reality is that everybody's unhappier now. Everybody's more miserable. Men, women, white people, black people, everybody in this society is more unhappy, more angry, and the whole society is more dysfunctional now than it's ever been. These people who are taking an active role of making society that way, they want you to not even know it's any different. That's their only answer. We have to do some censorship. We have to get rid of any reminders that it doesn't have to be this way, because at some point, everybody's going to stand up and say, we don't want to do this anymore. And that could put a big wrench in their plans for this apparent utopia that's never, ever going to show up.
You know, that's the really saddest thing. I mean, they're trying to destroy the dreams and the aspirations of the innocent children now. Well, all you have to do to remedy that is just show your children traditional classic children's books, and then they'll have a similar childhood to the ones that we had. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Grandpa. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back on Monday with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.